A Thanksgiving Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 28, 1996, entitled Surprised at Mercy's Dawning. The text for the sermon is Lamentations 3, verses 22 through 23. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
In March, when I was in Jerusalem, I was impressed again with the beauty of that city. There's something very special about Jerusalem. Its history, of course, is so rich. When one thinks that it was the place of King David, of prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, that it was the city to which Jesus came, in which he was crucified and raised again from the dead, the city from which the good news went forth throughout all the world. As I visited it after a good many years, I was impressed with the expansion of the city and the beauty of its setting again. And at the Western Wall, or the Wailing Wall, where there's these huge, huge blocks that are a part of the foundation of the Second Temple, there's now a large plaza with many, many people. And, of course, the pious, observant Jews saying their prayers at that ancient wall. And that ancient wall continues to be a sacred place. It is the wall of the temple, the second temple, that was destroyed in 70, the common era, 70 years after Christ. One goes to modern Jerusalem and all of its wonder, but is reminded with that ancient ruin that this has been a city that has known disaster and desolation. But those ancient stones still exposed are the foundation of a second temple, because it had happened centuries before. In 587, Nebuchadnezzar, who sat where Saddam Hussein now sits, head of the great Babylonian Empire, finally broke through the defenses of Jerusalem and razed the city, destroying the temple. And the words of the Hebrew poet that I read a moment ago are words that arise out of that first destruction of the temple and of Jerusalem. They are words of terrible anguish and deep hurt. They arise out of the most intense darkness. Sometimes we use words from this Hebrew poem in order to express the sorrow of Jesus on the way to the cross. Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look and see if there is any sorrow like my sorrow. The poet goes on and on and on, pouring out his grief, speaking about how the Lord has scorned his people. The Lord has scorned his altar, disowned his sanctuary, delivered into the hand of the enemy the walls of her palaces. A clamor was raised in the house of the Lord as on a day of festival. The Lord determined to lay in ruins the walls of his daughter Zion. The Hebrew poet understood the things that happened in history in direct relationship with that which God was doing. And although you and I have a greater difficulty seeing that immediate connection, nonetheless, there was deep within this poet the sense that what had happened to Jerusalem was the consequence of the people's transgression and faithlessness to God. And therefore, the anguish that they were enduring was the consequence of the faithlessness that they had displayed And he pours out his heart in grief to God. And then in the midst of the poem come those words that I read a moment ago. After all of the darkness, after all of the terrible intensity of the pain, we read, "This I call to mind, and therefore I hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. God's mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." And on Thanksgiving, I'm always surprised again at the paradox that it is not the heart for whom all has gone beautifully well. It is much more often out of the heart that has been broken that hope arises and thanksgiving issues. Isn't that a miracle, or at least a mystery? And isn't it true? It was true of the first Thanksgiving. We read a moment ago in that celebration, that first celebration of the pilgrims, it was not that they had the kind of feast that we're going to have as we leave this place. It's not that they lived in the comfort and the affluence of our lives. It was a fact that they had survived, having buried many of their own, that they had just enough to scratch through. And out of that kind of situation of intense need, they said, "Thank God." The human person is often able to handle adversity more profitably than prosperity. And it is more often those difficult times when we are called up short and faced with those things that are really important and that really matter after all. And on this Thanksgiving 1996, Christ Community Church and all of you who've gathered in this happy Thanksgiving celebration, I want to say as well that 1996 was one of our most difficult years, and probably no Thanksgiving in which I have felt more gratitude for this community of faith and for all of you and for that which has happened to us in the past year, opening up for us that which lies before us still. I got a call recently from a friend I had not had contact with for years. It was a beautiful woman's voice with a southern accent, which I recognized immediately. It was a woman whom I had met in the Netherlands when I left after my graduate studies. She and her husband came in to the University of Leiden, where he was going to spend a sabbatical year, and they bought my car and took over my borrowed furniture and rented my flat and became dear friends. He was a Southern Baptist professor of theology at Southeastern Baptist Seminary in Wake Forest. And after I got back, I visited them, and we wrote back and forth occasionally, and then it dribbles down to a Christmas card. But I got this telephone call out of the blue one evening, and this woman said, "Dick, this is a voice out of your past." She received the Southern Baptist newsletter, Baptist Today, and there on the front page was the Christ Community story. And she said, "Dick, I got to call you to tell you that I am so proud of you. I send you my love, and I want you to know that what you have done in this past year will result in a more beautiful experience of the people of God than you've ever known in your life. And then she went on to tell me that she was speaking out of concrete experience, because she attends church in Raleigh, North Carolina, the Pullman Memorial Church. And I had known that that church had gone through intense controversy over the past 3 years. They were a Southern Baptist church. I don't know what the occasion was, but there was a point at which, similar to our situation, where we had to stand up, they had to stand up. And they opened themselves to the gay and lesbian community. And they stood on that principle as a principle of the grace of God and the gospel as they understood it. And they were confronted by the Southern Baptist Convention. They were challenged. Eventually, they were thrown out. And she said to me, mentioning her pastor's name, "He has been through the darkness and through hell, but the light is dawning." And then she said, "I want you to know that we have learned, experienced, come to know a community of love and compassion and joy like we never would have known any other way." And she said, "I just had to call you and tell you I'm happy for you and I'm proud of you, and stand firm, because the best lies before you still." It's often out of the darkness, out of the struggle, out of the loss, that we come to contemplate those things that matter after all. And suddenly, as a gift, hope dawns. Hope happens. Hope is a gift. And in the midst of the darkness, there's light. And we shake ourselves. And we become aware of God. And that hope floods our lives. And we can only sing, "Great is thy faithfulness." I called an old friend of mine on Saturday, Mrs. Berkoff, the wife of my good professor, who died a year ago, who had a birthday. I said to her, "Corey, how are you?" And she said, "Oh, all right." She said, "I've had a long life. I've had rich experiences. I've got my children and my grandchildren. Yeah, I miss Hank, of course. And I tire easily, but I have so much, and a future." And I thought, how beautiful. Someone who's been through long years, rich experience, has known loss, is in her ninth decade, but says, "It's good. It's good now. And I have a future." The Jews today are praying at the Wailing Wall, the old foundation of the temple that was destroyed in 70 AD. Which was the second temple, because there had been a temple in 587 BC destroyed. But John had a vision one day of the things that would ultimately be, and he saw a vision of a new Jerusalem coming down from God out of heaven, adorned as a bride, adorned for her bridegroom. And he heard a voice saying, "Behold, the dwelling of God is with humankind. God will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and he will be their God. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more, neither crying nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away. Behold, I make all things new. Jerusalem with its ups and downs, its temples that are raised, and its temples that are raised, becomes a symbol of that human pilgrimage that we are on. And why is it, through all of the hell and all of the darkness and all of the hurt, that we still come up and find ourselves buoyed by hope? Hope against hope, maybe, and yet hope. Because finally, don't we know, great is thy faithfulness? Isn't it finally that we have decided that our lives have been based on a choice, a decision, that we will be people of faith, trusting that this drama of creation of which we are a part is not some accident, not some chance meandering of forces and pressures and whatever may be? Do we not finally go through all that there is in the human story and come to the amazing consciousness of hope in the midst of it all? Because we know we are not alone, because God is with us. And God will see us through until the ruins of the old Jerusalem are transformed in that Jerusalem from above, when we shall live in eternal praise of the God of all mercy. Tomorrow morning, friends, the sun will rise and the mercy of God will be new. You can count on it. So, live in hope and continue to be surprised by the fresh dawning of God's mercy.